Good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Dolan, and I am your host for Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell. And I'm excited today to introduce an agent to you, a sales agent, Jessica Duarte, that I've known for several years, who has a lot to share about her real estate career and many of the different facets that she's been involved with. She started as a young woman in our business, worked as a solo agent, has worked as part of a team, worked again as a solo agent, has run her own team, and is heavily involved in personal investment with her husband. So with that, I'd like to invite you, Jessica, to join the show and introduce yourself and tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Jessica Duarte with RE/MAX and Big Bear. I work everywhere from Big Bear all the way to the ends of Crestline. I've been doing real estate up here for 11 going on 12 years, which is crazy because it's gone by so quickly. And I love it. It's definitely something I'm passionate about, and I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Awesome. Awesome. So you are basically working the entire top of the mountain in Southern California.
Exactly.
That's awesome. So now I know you grew up in Big Bear. One of the questions that I ask everybody that I talk to is, you know, when you were growing up, did you aspire to be a real estate agent, or when did it become part of your mindset that it might be an opportunity for you?
So yes, I didn't know it at the time, but my mom was, she was an office manager at Spencer, not an office manager. She worked at Spencer Real Estate. So, you know, she was doing typewriting stuff and all sorts of back end paperwork. And I remember running through the hall. So I kind of grew up with it in my system. But when she became office manager of RE/MAX several years ago, I remember driving around and sitting in the back seat, looking at these big, gorgeous homes and always wondering what the inside of these properties look like. It's kind of weird, but it was definitely, I think, a driving force. I wanted to see how other people lived their lives. And now I get to see how people live their lives and also help them to basically make, you know, their lives look maybe a little more appealing in the photo sometimes.
Yeah, well, absolutely. There's nothing better than photoshopping houses, right? Our consumers need to know they always look better in the photos than they do when you actually go to see them. That's crazy. So you are the first person I think that I've talked to that was thinking about real estate as part of your future long before you got involved with it. That's sort of interesting. Were there any other interests that you had that were sort of competing with the real estate, or was that sort of going to be it?
Definitely something in the more of an artistic nature. So I thought cosmetology, I thought some kind of design. My mom went to Brooks College, so I did think maybe interior design. So I was definitely tossing with something in that realm. I just didn't know what it was. So, and then it's kind of interesting how I've been able to incorporate the two.
Awesome. Well, and when we talk about staging and some of the other things that you are doing in your business, that'll become apparent, sort of that interest in that background. So think back. I'm not sure I remember exactly when you started, but go back and try to remember what it felt like to be a new agent, you know, maybe what your fears were, what your goals were, and what your experience was as you were just starting out.
Felt like it was never going to happen. I felt like I was working at a restaurant here in Big Bear. I just joined Realty Executives, and I was working full-time, and I was just so frustrated. I was doing open houses, and I remember Gary White. I did an open house for Gary White, and I came back the next day, and I gave Gary a lead sheet of all the walk-ins that came in that day. And I remember Gary saying, well, what is this for? I'm like, well, these are all the people who came into your open house. He's like, no, that's your open house, Jessica. These are your leads. You get to follow up with them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have the golden ticket. I finally have something I could do. Cause I would, you know, we had phone books at the time, but they were very small phone books. So I would handwrite letters to the addresses in the phone book and send those out. I would cold call in the phone books. It didn't really lead into anything, I think, because of my own insecurities at the time, but it definitely helped me because I was very insecure. It was very difficult for me to talk to older people. I felt very inferior. I didn't feel educated enough or smart enough. So working through that process and doing the cold call through the phone book, I think it helped give me a little more confidence. Yeah. In order to pursue.
One of my criticisms of the real estate industry is, you know, the quality of training. There is no standardized training. There is no one way. There is no one best practice for training real estate agents. I remember when I first got into the business 40 years ago, my training was, you know, your desk is over there. There's a phone on your desk. I'll see you at the sales meeting on Friday. That was my training. And I learned from listening to the other people that were in the office. And I think for the most part, you know, throughout at least the last 40 years, the best way to learn the real estate business is over time by watching your peers and watching successful people that are there. Obviously, there's coaching and other opportunities for training today, but there's nothing standardized. And some of the training is really good and some of the training is not so good. So I recognize, you know, what you're sharing there about now, what do I do? I mean,
you know, I'm licensed now, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and so in order to pass a test, you learn a bunch of legal things, right? You learn all kinds of legal stuff, but they never teach you how to sell.
Right.
Right. They never teach you how to sell.
And that's what I tell everyone. You could pass the test, but what you put into action is so much different than what you learned on the test. I mean, it's important, but half the time, I mean, even when we renew our license or we take the code of ethics, do we really know, you know, do we really implement that? Do we really know what we're testing on?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the stuff doesn't apply unless it does apply in your business. And but selling applies to all salespeople. So, you know, that's interesting. So, you know, as you go back to, you know, thinking about how it started, can you sort of describe from your perspective the path from starting to where you are now? What were the milestones?
There's been many. So, I mean, I started off as a solo agent. Then I joined your team, which I learned a lot from. I think when I was a part of your team, it helped me develop a better routine, helped me. I mean, it really kind of, I think, shaped me the most. And then from there, I went on my own. And I was really, I'm very competitive by nature. And so I kind of have always picked a person. It doesn't have to necessarily be in our company. It could be in any brokerage that's local. And I'm always competing with them. I don't know that that's necessarily a healthy thing because when they win, it hurts. But I've always been very competitive. So it creates this aggression, this fire within me where I want to be number one. I have to beat the odds. And I remember there was a day when I went in to pick up a check and someone said to me, and I was looking through the checks, and this was a big milestone for me. I'm looking through the checks and this person, you know, there's this bundle of checks and this person says, Jessica, you don't close that many deals. And she's like, this is your check. And she pulls out my one measly little check in the back. And I'm like, oh. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start picking up bundles of checks. I am going to work so hard that I'm not going to quit until I have a bundle of checks to pick up. And eventually, and it wasn't too long after that. I'd say it was maybe 6 to 8 months after that, I started picking up bundles of checks. And so I think sometimes when people don't have the faith in you, or they don't think that you're qualified or that you have the caliber to do something, it lights that fire within me. And I love to prove people wrong about myself.
You know, that's, you know, it's interesting to me, you know, when you share that, because what people say, you never know how other people are responding to that. I mean, that comment that was made to you about, you know, those checks are for somebody else, you don't get bundles like that, probably was said very innocently, most likely. It was said very innocently. It was probably just information and
absolutely.
Sort of, it was a throwaway comment. And yet, you know, the fire and the motivation that it put in you. I mean, I love that. I mean, there's all kinds of things that people say and do that get me sort of motivated too. So, you know, that's exciting. Share a couple of other milestones, you know, in your career where you felt like you had overcome an obstacle.
I think, you know, I've always had a goal to have my own team. And that was an obstacle in itself because you don't, you know, from when you look at other people who are running teams, you think it's easy. You think it's simple stuff. You think, oh, I'm going to run a team and then I get to make all this money. And it's not like that at all. You don't understand how much time and effort goes into the phone calls. I mean, obviously you do, especially running your own team and also being a broker. That's like running two very large teams. But having the constant problems. Like, I've never had so many real estate problems in my career. And so with one agent in particular, it's like there is just always some kind of issue in trying to mitigate that and trying to walk this person through that. You know, the different personalities, sometimes I'm just like, oh my gosh, if this person calls me again, I'm going to lose my mind, you know, but you're the team leader and you have to answer the call. You have to be there to help them. And so I think that that was a huge challenge to overcome. I'm grateful for the experience. I don't know that I would ever run my own team again. It was kind of one of those trial periods that I'm like, you know, this just might not be for me. I like being my own agent. I like not having to worry about other individuals. I also like the freedom of doing what I want. I don't really like, you know, I remember one time I heard you say that you went off on your own because you don't like being told what to do. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like me. I don't like being told what to do. And so it's kind of that balance where I don't have to look over other people. I don't have to be told what to do. I drive my own business. I'm the driving force behind it. And so, you know, sometimes I have to pull back on my business a little bit. Sometimes I know, even though it hurts, because like I said, I'm very competitive. And so I don't like seeing other people, especially the person that I have my eye on and doing really well while I'm like back here. But I know that I have to just have that grace for myself, even though I have my moments that I'm like, okay, I don't have grace for myself today.
Yeah.
But you have to push through it.
Well, I know in the conversations that we've had in the past, you know, I've shared with you that being a top performing salesperson is a different skill set than being a team leader. And you can do both. I mean, there are some people that do both. Some things are more enjoyable for other people. And I don't think it's good nor bad whether you're a solo agent or whether you run a team or you're on a team. I don't think it's good or bad what you choose to do. I think what matters is whether you're in the right place at the right time and you're happy with the role that you're playing at the time, because the worst thing to do is to be on a team and not want to be on the team, or to run a team and not want to run the team.
Right.
I mean, that's the kiss of death there. So very good. So that's a good lesson, learning what it was like to manage a team and changing your focus on that. So, you know, there's, you know, one of the things that I've seen you do with your business over the years that is quite remarkable in my mind is of all the people that I know, you know, that are in my marketplace that I've seen work, you seem to have taken a big grasp on social media in that marketing. So can you talk a little bit about what got you involved with that, how you learned it, you know, what the process was like, what works for you now, and maybe some things that people should avoid doing?
Yeah, absolutely. When I first started doing Instagram, it was a brand new platform. So I was pretty fortunate in the sense where I got to kind of grow with Instagram. You know, it was a lot of us just posting pictures and trying to figure out what stuck. It was mostly, you know, kind of very similar to Facebook initially, where it was just friends. So you might only have 127 followers and it's just people you know. And that was okay because you had very high engagement with that. You know, you'd get 127 likes on a photo. You'd get a lot of commentary on a photo. As I grew, or as I started real estate, I knew that I was going to have to develop my own real estate platform, which 11, almost 12 years ago was BigBearRealtor_Jess. So I didn't have a lot to post. So it'd be, you know, selfies, be very, you know, doctored up selfies of me trying to like tell people things, or I would take screenshots of goals and post that, or post other people's, you know, listings or open houses I did, just really trying to like throw things out there to see what stuck. And again, I still had pretty good engagement because it was so new. The algorithm was really easy to manage. It was so much like Facebook, or you know, hashtags were just becoming a thing. So it was very simple. I would say it got pretty difficult, and I was able to get a big following right away. It got very difficult, I would say, probably around COVID. They changed, I mean, they're constantly changing the algorithms. So as I kind of mentioned previously, was just learning the new algorithms is a full-time job. So I'm using a lot of ChatGPT now for that, just asking what I need to do, what I should be posting, and really trying to utilize that avenue to make sure I'm doing the right thing. However, I have seen a huge decrease in engagement recently because so many people now, they're looking at the stories. So you could post on your feed, but you're not going to see the same engagement as you do from your stories. Everyone's going through the stories at the top. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that any of us can go on. The algorithm is set up to keep you on your phone as long as possible. It's not to show. I mean, we've all been there, right? You get stuck in that swiping mode where all of a sudden you think you've been on the phone for 30 minutes and it's 2.5 hours and you're like, shoot, I need to go to bed right now. And, you know, you just all you wanted to do was decompress before bed. At least that's something I've done. However, what you're seeing in your feed is not from friends and family. And you could change it to make it from friends and family, but you're still not just getting the posts and reels from friends and family. You're getting anything that Instagram says, she likes baking. So now I'm going to send her a bunch of baking reels to keep her on here longer. And she's going to like these cooking reels. And then all of a sudden you're on there and you're not seeing anything else. So the way that people are really staying connected right now, at least my opinion, is through the stories. So if I had any advice to anyone, it's don't be afraid to put your face on the stories. It's better to be more authentic and genuine than just posting something that's very, you know, that's AI generated and makes you look beautiful. I mean, you could still use the filters, but I would say use filters that don't make your lips look super big and, you know, put the fake makeup on. Just try and be as authentic as possible through these stories, because that's what's going to get you the most engagement.
Okay. Well, you know, that's good to know. I took 4 years of a break from social media and came back to it. And I can tell you that there's a lot of stuff going on and I'm not sure I get what's happening with it. But one thing that you mentioned that I thought was interesting is that in the beginning, you said it was easy to get followers, particularly with friends and people that you don't know or that you do know. And in my mind, as a salesperson, anything that I want to do that's business oriented needs to be focused really on people that I don't know that are not real estate, because I know real estate people aren't going to buy from me. And most of the people that I knew were either real estate people or in the industry somehow. So how did you find a way to make connections with people that were not real estate people that would not do business with you, I guess would be a good point.
Hashtag. So I think what's good about where we live up here in the mountains is, you know, Southern California has such a huge population of people. And I guarantee you at least one household is going to make a trip up here at some point in their life. And the thing is when they come up here, it's so beautiful and it's so refreshing. The air's clean. It's so much different from where they live. So when you're using the appropriate hashtags, I mean, something just as simple as hashtag Big Bear Lake can go so far, because people now, before they come up here, they're going to go and look up Big Bear Lake. They're going to look up things to do on Big Bear Lake. And so you're going to get noticed that way. And I've gotten a ton of leads. I just had 4 leads in the last month. Well, a little less than a month, about 3 weeks. 4 leads in the last 3 weeks, 1 buyer lead, 3 listing leads from Instagram. And it's because I'm also not just going on there and using the appropriate hashtags, but I'm also seeking people. I use those hashtags to find Airbnbs that are local, and I start following those Airbnbs. I start liking all their posts and engaging with other people. I'm not waiting for people to just come and find me. I'm now going and seeking other people with those hashtags.
Okay. So if I hear this right, tell me. Is that a lot of people use Instagram where they post things and they want people to come to them. And you've turned the tables to where you're using Instagram to go find the people.
Yes. In fact, one listing we've already listed, we just went live this last week. We have another one coming up either next week or the following week. We're just kind of testing the market right now. But that was because I found them on Instagram.
No, that's fascinating. And I think you answered some of what I was going to follow up with your social media, is what's working well today and what doesn't work anymore. Is there anything that people are doing that you... Well, one of the things that I see is that there is just a tremendous amount of posts going up. I mean, people are putting up houses and they're just putting up graphics and all kinds of stuff. How do you create something that is good content, or does it really matter whether you do good content or whether it's just that you're consistent?
I think both. I think it's difficult to, you know, because a lot of us, our goals are to, you know, just have this reel posted and it go just everywhere. And all of a sudden we have 100,000 likes on it. I mean, that would be amazing. And there are agents up here who do that. But again, that's really finding a niche and doing well with it. I've never had a reel with 100,000. Well, actually I have the Eagles. Everyone really loves the Eagles. So I've had millions of people like, and just the two reels there. But when it comes to the actual real estate posts, it's really hard because you can get one post that does really well one week and you think, okay, I got it. And then the next week you kind of follow that same criteria that you initially had and then it doesn't work. So it's so all over the place. I mean, you used to be able to post an A-frame and it would just go crazy. Now people are kind of like, A-frames are cool, but you know, we're not going crazy over A-frames anymore. So it's just, times are turning so quickly. It's a lot of trial and error.
Okay. So it's great to hear that that program is working for you. And it's working better than anybody else that I know personally. So congratulate yourself on that. You're doing a great job with it. Another thing about your business that stands out to me that, you know, maybe it's pretty common, but you took a, you know, a major commitment into property staging with your listings. You know, I mean, an entire program that you marketed. So can you talk a little bit about how you developed that? Sounds like it comes from your interest in artistic things, number one. But how did you incorporate that into your business and what's worked well with you for that?
So I first noticed, I can't take full credit for it because I first noticed Karen LeBruin back when we were at Realty Executives and we were going on our broker tours. She always had the most beautiful listings. Like you could walk in and it wouldn't be the greatest listing, but because of her staging, she would make it feel so much cozier and it'd be so much more appealing, look so much better in the photos. So that's initially where I got the idea. And then fortunately, we had Kmart up here at the time. So I had one listing that I'm like, man, it's not doing it. So I went and I spent, I don't know, $150 at Kmart just to throw some candles out there and just kind of fluff it up is what I call it. And it did really well. I'm like, man, I was really proud of myself. So just over time, I just continue to invest and, you know, just reuse the furniture. And so it's kind of nice because it's almost like once you get a good system down and it looks good with whatever the design factors matter today, because you know, when I first started, it was kind of country, like rustic. And now I still have staging items that I'm like, I need to get rid of this because I don't think I'm ever going to use it again. Because things, you know, they fall out of popularity. It's just not the design. So now it's very boho, very kind of modern, you know, more neutral tones. And so I'm trying to incorporate that into my listings. Once one sells, I just basically move the furniture to the next listing. And because it is just a one-man show. It's just me doing it by myself, you know, making as many trips as I need to get it perfect. I'm also cleaning the property at that time. I'm very, very meticulous with it. And normally it sells pretty quickly. And this market's been quite different than the past few years. So it's been a challenge, especially when I have listings coming up and all of my inventory has been spread out.
Yeah, that can be a challenge. I'm trying to follow up with that. So do you have dedicated storage for your inventory or do you hope to have enough listings to always have it out? I guess is probably the best way.
Ideally that we canceled our storage unit. I did have a storage unit at one point. And then they raised the prices and the market was starting to slow down quite a bit. So I was trying to save my money wherever I could. So we ended up filling a basement up with the staging. And now it's all spread out, fortunately, but we just moved into a brand new house and I don't know where I'm going to put it. So I try to kind of decorate my house with it.
Right.
Because I also rob from my house. Like one of my listings has a coffee table of ours.
Yeah.
You know, it has things. My husband came home from work. He's a firefighter. He came home from work and he's like, honey, where's our coffee table? Where's our hutch? Why are we missing furniture? I'm like, I'm sorry, babe. It's for the job.
That's pretty funny. Okay, so social media, staging. The other thing that I have observed, you and your husband, Jonathan, is that you are investors. You invest in our product. And you've been pretty successful. I don't know how many homes for sure that you've bought, but sort of talk about how you got into the investment and how that's been working for the two of you.
So we currently have 6 properties. We just sold one that was up here in Sugarloaf. We had partners on that. One thing we learned was we don't want partners ever again. That wasn't a fun experience. I think it's, you really have to know who those people are and have, I think, a very good relationship with someone you want to be partners on. So I'm glad that we experienced that so we don't have to do it again. But one is an Airbnb in Joshua Tree. And my husband manages the Airbnb. He does really well with that. And with that property, we've realized, and we bought our property at a really great time. It was right before COVID. I think it was 2018 when we bought it, but we bought it for $75,000 and it's worth probably $350,000 now. So we did really great with that property. However, our biggest goal is to buy and hold. We're not believers in burning and turning. I think that that works for some people. For us, that's just not our goal. We believe that investing in property and buying and holding is a much safer place than putting your money in the bank. Although we do like having money in the bank too. But we have a property in Haley, Idaho that's a long-term rental. You know, we really lucked out with that. They just signed and renewed with a 2-year lease. But I have to say, a lot of this is my husband behind it. He's kind of more of the driving force through this. So I'm learning a lot. We're both learning a lot as we go. And I think a big factor is diversifying in your investments as well. So not having strictly Airbnbs or strictly long-term rentals, you know, but diversifying, having your properties in different markets, not all in the same market. Because obviously if you have 4 Airbnbs just in Big Bear, it's great when the market's great. Yeah, but as soon as it's terrible, every single property is now affected by that. So having a diversified inventory, you know, or portfolio, I think is really crucial.
Yeah, I think that's a really overlooked part of our business. And I'm glad, I mean, you two are very young still. So to be heavily involved in investment is a good thing. I was told early on that you can earn your living selling real estate, being a broker or being an agent. But to become wealthy in real estate, you need to buy your product. You need to be an investor in the real estate yourself. And so part of the process of being in the business itself is that you have, you know, you have pretty good market knowledge of what's a good investment and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great thing. Is there any suggestions that you would make to anybody other than not getting a partner? Because I've heard it too. A partnership is a sinking ship is the way it was told to me.
Oh, I like that. I mean, buying in a down market. So, you know, right now this market's scary. But the fact that a buyer can come in and really negotiate the terms to his or her benefit, where I'm seeing properties, I think I wrote an offer on a property that was like $231 a square foot. And it was a big property, but it didn't need that much work. And I wanted to buy it. I couldn't afford it. Now we're really stretched thin. But man, there's so many great opportunities out there. And when people are fearful of the market, it's the people who make the choices to commit to a market like this that always win. So even though it hurts at the beginning to see these interest rates and it might stretch you thin in a, you know, couple years, whatever it may be, once the market gets better, you're going to be sitting on a pot of gold. That's just my opinion.
Well, you know, Warren Buffett says, you know, go the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way it, and you know, and it's funny is that there's so many people that I have met over the last 40 years that want to be investors. And when presented with an opportunity to buy a house, they say, oh, you know, the market's too hot. I got to wait for the market to cool down, for prices to fall, then I'll buy. And then when the prices fall, then they say, well, I'm going to wait for the market to get better before, because it might get worse, kind of thing.
I think too, anytime you buy an investment property, whatever it is, making sure that it's a payment you can afford on your own. Because if you're strictly if you need this investment to make you money in order to make this mortgage payment, it's probably not a wise decision. It's something that you should be able to pay on your own in case something happens, and something always happens.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I wanted to switch gears a little bit. You mentioned it a little bit earlier that the market has been interesting. That was one word that you used. It's been interesting. Maybe frustrating was another word that you used. I don't remember exactly what word you used, but the real estate market in general right now, particularly in Big Bear, has been way off from what it was in the last couple of years. And I know that, you know, anytime there's that transition, you know, it's always painful. I mean, it's always painful. And so I know as we were preparing to talk today that you shared a little bit about how you were feeling today. So can you talk a little bit about what you're experiencing now in the market? And then we'll talk about what we're going to do to get out of it, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've been experiencing some very low confidence, to be completely honest. You know, being in this market, I mean, before COVID, I was on a roll. I had 3 to 4 escrows every month closing. You know, then COVID obviously comes and I'm closing 10 deals a month. And then I had the team and then we're closing 15 deals. You know, it's just, it's the first time in since the beginning of my career that I've been this slow, that I've, you know, I have buyers that want to buy. And I'm showing them property for months, you know, so it's a lot of going out, showing property, which is full days, sometimes multiple days, depending on the client and where we're looking. And then I've got a ton of people wanting to list properties and we're listing properties and it's sitting on the market and we're watching the days on market increase. We're watching the average days on market just for this, you know, just for Big Bear, we'll speak to increase for everyone. And it's really discouraging because, you know, you want to set yourself apart. So you pay for all this branding, hire the best photography, you stage it, you take all this time. And then you get to a point where you finally get something in escrow and then it cancels. And then you get it back into escrow and then it cancels. Then you get someone else into escrow, then it cancels. And you're like, is it me? Do I have some kind of real estate repellent? Is what I told my husband. I was like, I have like this repellent. And then of course, eventually you do get a repellent, right? Because you become so desperate that people, they feel it, you know, they feel your desperation and it kind of impairs your judgment on how you're selling because you're almost, you know, kind of pushing the buyer to make the offer.
Right.
And so it's been a challenge to really work around that and to try and give it to God and, you know, say, because again, like I said, I'm really competitive. So I'll go on the MLS and I'll see who's selling and I'm watching who's selling and I'll see the individual agents who are doing a really good job right now. And I get jealous and I'm like, well, what are they doing that I'm not doing? I'm working my tail end off. I haven't gotten paid in a month. What are they doing that I'm not doing? And so I really have to kind of sit down and self-analyze, see what I need to do differently. And sometimes, you know, life throws its own challenges at you outside of real estate. And so sometimes you just can't do what everyone else is doing. Like we just moved. Moving is a nightmare.
Right.
You know, it creates a layer of stress where you try and go and get a pen and you don't even know what box the pens are in. So, you know, there's different layers to that, but I think I went on tour this last week and I was talking to another agent. I'm like, I just need one, just one escrow to close to help my confidence. And I opened up 2 escrows and I'm negotiating on a third. So I'm really just praying, you know, and it has helped my confidence. I do feel like, okay, things are getting better. The market seems to kind of be shifting right now. But it's interesting how quickly, and it's not quickly, it took me months to get to a point where I'm just, I was so just heartbroken and really turning inward on myself.
Okay. So, you know, it sounds, I mean, And I think there are some people call them plateaus. Some people call them, you know, downturns. You know, Jim Rohn says, you know, there are winter, you know, the life is like the seasons, you know, there's springs. Everybody loves the spring. Summers are fun. Everybody's having fun. You know, the fall, it's slowing down a little bit. And then there's the winters of our life. And we all go through those down periods. And I like, you know, what Jim Rohn says is he says, you know, in the winters of our life, we can get wiser. We can get better and we can get stronger. And I heard a little bit about that in you when you were sharing is that, you know, hey, I sit down and I look to see who's selling and I look to see what is it they're doing. Are they working with buyers? Or are they working with sellers? You know, what does their marketing look like? How many listings do they have? I mean, are they selling a lot because they have, you know, 10 times as much inventory available? And so when you take a look at it, it's like trying to find out what is the truth. But sometimes it's simply us getting stronger and more resilient, you know, on the inside. You know, I think, what is that, you know, gold is refined in the hottest fire and diamonds are created by the, you know, the greatest pressure. And so I'm actually sort of thankful for the downturns because I had plenty of them in my career, certainly. I mean, you know, periods of despair, I'll just say, you know, periods of despair, but we've survived all of them. So can you think back to a previous downturn and identify what brought you out of it?
I mean, so in terms of real estate, I think that when I got in the market was just kind of picking up. It was just kind of catching on. Really, I don't, you know, other than the first probably 2 years of my real estate career, that was the hardest. What I like to say is that along with this market is like trying to run a marathon through molasses. You're expending all this energy, but you're not going very far, you know, because you can only go as far as the obstacle in front of you. And, you know, but you're not going to stop trying, right? You're going to try and get to that finish goal. So I don't really have an example of a previous downturn market that I've experienced because for me, I was just getting started. So I just thought it was normal. Now I look at it and I see how spoiled I've been. And what's interesting is growing up in the industry, you know, I was working in the office at RE/MAX back in 2008, 2009. So I saw what happened to a lot of agents at that time where they were selling their houses, they were selling their cars. And so it's really interesting because I swore to myself that I would never allow myself to be put in a position. So I always saved my reserves. However, sometimes those reserves run out. And my reserves did run out. And so it was very scary. And fortunately, I'm married. And so my husband and I don't get to see very often now because he's at the fire station. But luckily, I am married. And so I do have that financial support as to where if I were on my own, I'd be really scared.
So, you know, as I'm sitting here thinking about, I mean, you know, it's your first downturn in the market. Everybody goes through their first one. You know, the second one, you're typically a lot stronger, you know, going through the second one than you are now, but it sounds like you're starting to work your way through it. I talked with an agent, you know, that hadn't opened a deal in over 2 months. And I can say, you know, in the last week, they opened three. So, you know, you never know when it's going to turn the tide. So it sounds like it's already starting to do that for you. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely, but I think it's also typical for our market this time of year for it to kind of pick up.
Yeah. This is the time where it's going to pick up. Another topic that is interesting to go through is how to balance, you know, you're married and you have a husband and you have this real estate career that's 24/7, you know, is there any, you know, do you do what some people do, which is that they're running crazy 24/7 all the time, or do you have boundaries or anything that you have set aside to make sure that you manage your business and your married life so that you guys can be happy in that?
Yeah. So if it were up to me, I would not have boundaries. I would work 24/7, but because I am married, I have to have boundaries. Obviously my marriage is my priority even over my business. So when it comes down to it, when John and I first started dating, I didn't have any boundaries. And so John, when he's at the fire station, I'd work until 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock sometimes. And then I remember one instance where there was a buyer and her husband started to get involved. and he'd be texting me up until midnight. Then he'd start texting me again at 4:35 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't, I would still get the notifications. So when my husband came home and he's hearing that ding, 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 oh, he was so mad. He's like, honey, you need to create boundaries. Like, this is not okay. This is not normal behaviors. And so I learned early on that you have to enforce these boundaries, because what you think people would automatically assume, like, hey, we're going to wait until 8 o'clock. That's not, like, not everyone thinks the way that I don't want to say normal people, but not everyone thinks the same. You know, they don't have that same respect for you. And even now it's hard, because when John, you know, when you're thirsty and you're hungry, and now since John's working so much because of the slow season, it is really hard for me to protect my boundaries when he is gone, because I'm like, well, I'm home alone. I'm either going to clean my house or I'm going to work. Well, you know what? Unpacking is really boring now. I'm kind of over it. I'd rather work. So it's really easy for me to just completely disregard my boundaries. But fortunately with my husband, and that's one thing I do try and do, is because he only has 1 or 2 days off a week, I try and schedule everything on the days that he doesn't have off so that we can have that time together, because it is a very short period for us. So I really try and protect those days.
Very good. Very good. So were you uncomfortable when I invited you to do the podcast?
Yes. Well, only because I just feel like it's easier to do something like this when you're doing well.
Okay. You know, the thing about time, and you know, this is sort of a plug for time-tested mastery and the people that I'm talking to, the thing that's fascinating to me, and one of my premises is that extraordinary things are done by seemingly ordinary people. Extraordinary things are done by seemingly ordinary people. And when you get to talk with people that do extraordinary things, you learn what makes them tick. You start to see the things that are similar, the goal setting, the drive, the discipline, the struggle with the boundaries, the struggles with the self-doubt and with all of those kinds of things. And I think what's really important about what I'm trying to do with time-tested mastery is I want people to know that the people that are successful feel exactly like they do. You know, and the people that haven't achieved the success that their hearts are dreaming for know that the people that are achieving it felt like they did at one time when they were first starting out. I think that's a powerful thing to do. And in order to grow, you have to be uncomfortable. Anything that you do that causes you to grow makes you uncomfortable, right? So I want to commend you for doing the podcast and sharing the information. One of two people, either a brand new agent getting into the business that's just starting out that doesn't know what to do. One option is to answer, what would you suggest for that new agent? And the second one is, if you see somebody, or if you were talking with somebody that said they were struggling and didn't know whether they were going to make it, what would you share with that agent? So pick your advice for one or the other.
Okay, I'll go with a new agent. I think as a new agent, getting started in a market like this is a huge blessing, because you're going to learn to work. At least I hope so. I hope that, you know, as a new agent, you learn to work. Don't be lazy. Know your disclosures. You have time right now to know those disclosures inside and out. When you show property, read all of the details in the MLS, like know each property. You have time to know those details so you don't have to ask the listing agent repetitive questions, you know, via text. You can just figure, you know, see it for yourself. And then on top of it, you know, utilize your free advertising. So social media is a free platform to advertise yourself. And that's what we're doing as real estate agents. We are advertising ourselves. We're advertising our unique personalities and trying to find people that we're going to be a good match for. There's a lot of, you know, you can go deeper into that, but I think those are the biggest things, is don't just expect things to happen for you. You have to go and make it happen for you. You have to be aggressive and you have to be hungry. And a lot of people, and the other thing is if you make a mistake, own it. Don't try and blame someone else for it. Don't try and say, well, you didn't do this or you didn't do that. Just own your mistakes, apologize, and move on. It's really just that simple.
Yeah, that ends the conversation. I screwed up. Let's fix it and move on. That ends the argument right there. Fascinating. Well, Jessica, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to work with you, and I so appreciate you sharing your thoughts and experience with other people, and I look forward to your future success.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate today.